Hey, I'm Peter Mudlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, great news. It's a super simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this show, whether a teacher, a coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this show with us. So please do tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with all of your nominations and your story ideas at teachersLounge@niu.edu. This week, it is our conversation with Rockford's Lathrop Elementary School principal, Daniela Boyer. Daniela has had a fascinating career. She's from Brazil, came to Northern Illinois as an exchange student in high school, went back home, taught in Brazil, lived in Mexico, and eventually returned to the U.S. to teach in Rockford. And she really has a passion and enthusiasm for teaching, engaging with cultures, and learning languages. She already speaks three of them and is learning even more. She was also a part of a principal residency program. It's a partnership between Northern Illinois University and Rockford Public Schools. Now, you might have heard of schools growing their own teachers as a solution to staff shortages, but with this initiative, Rockford is growing their own principals too, and Daniela was part of that first cohort. We talk about all of it and so much more. It's a really fun conversation you're not going to want to miss. Before our conversation with Daniela, I have a few other education stories we want to share. 50% of voters aged 18 to 29 voted in the 2020 presidential election. It was a big increase from 2016, and I got to report on how student groups are trying to make sure their classmates are engaged in this year's election. 150 students wander the school library holding bingo cards. They're at Matilla Valley High School in Aurora. One square reads, "This person is a physician and believes every American deserves access to quality, affordable health and mental health care." This is a student-organized candidate fair featuring 20 candidates running for everything from a U.S. House seat to local judges and Forest Preserve commissioners. Rishvant Amsaraj is a senior at Matilla and chair of its political engagement club, Citizens of Matilla. The club has been organizing candidate fairs since 2020.
We know that, you know, sometimes it might be a little bit scary to like go talk to a judge. So what we did was we created a bingo card. And the bingo card has like a bunch of questions that are a little bit more like familiar for students to ask, like either their friends or candidates.
The candidates each introduce themselves and then stand around tables where students can ask them questions about the issues most important to them and understand more about what the candidates are running for and why. Bingo is meant to facilitate those conversations and, in true bingo fashion, get five in a row or four with a well-placed free space and they get a prize. Outside of the pride of knowing they're more well-informed, Ansaraj says they get candy too. And he says he was surprised about the issues his classmates have wanted to talk about, like personal finance.
Most of us are seniors here, so we're about to go into the real world. So it's important for us to kind of know what we're kind of getting ourselves into. So I think the main thing will be like housing, money, finances.
Some of these students are still 17, and in Illinois, 17-year-olds can vote in the primary as long as they turn 18 by the general election in November. Joshua Willoughby is another student at the candidate fair, and he was excited to learn more about local offices since he knew that otherwise he was going to show up at the ballot box looking confused at a bunch of names and positions he'd never heard of. Kira Nelson liked finding out that many of the candidates are just regular people who care.
I thought it was cool how some of like the candidates here didn't have that much political experience. Like they were here and they really just wanted to make like a difference. I thought that was kind of exciting to hear someone who was so passionate about just their community in general that they wanted to go out and try something new.
And the candidate fair isn't the only way Matilla students are engaging with the election this year. First off, they have to register to vote, and with the help of the League of Women Voters, they set up tables outside of their government class where students could register. Thanks to a 2021 Illinois law, high schools can't prohibit nonpartisan voter registration activities. Sue Fuhrer is a government teacher at Matilla Valley, and she's helping count how many students have registered.
84.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're doing good. You're way ahead.
I'm impressed. Okay, good. How did Wabanzi do?
I was going to say, did we do Wabanzi?
61.
Oh, I thought that was a lot. This is great.
Yeah.
They did an event in the fall as well.
We always do it like during our government classes, and we kind of identify a day that works well with our schedule. Like today they're working on a project, so they are able to leave the classroom. And I think we had like well over 100 in the fall.
Mia Reed is a senior who just got registered, and she says she could have done it online, but liked that she could do it in person, hold up her hand and swear an oath. It just made it all feel more serious.
So I wasn't originally raised in this district. I was raised in the next district over, 131, and there's a big like poverty divide between the two. So coming to the school, it was very obvious that I can't do a lot of the same things a lot of students here can do. It became strikingly obvious that the way I make my difference is by voting, and I wanted people who are going to stand up for me.
She and the other students know that there are pretty much no prominent politicians her age, and most powerful people in government are substantially older. But Reed says she's going to be the one who's around for the decisions that get made now, so she has to do her part. Early voting for the primaries is open in Illinois, and primary election day is March 19th. North Central College in Naperville, a small liberal arts school with fewer than 3,000 students, has become one of the premier women's wrestling programs in the entire country. And the program only started 5 years ago. I got to learn more about how they've become a powerhouse so quickly. Last spring, the North Central team took home their first national title, and three Cardinal wrestlers secured individual championships on top of that. Yelena Mukayed won her third consecutive national championship in 2023 and was named the first ever USA Wrestling Women's College Wrestler of the Year. She's also one of at least six North Central women's wrestlers who will compete at the Olympic trials later this spring, with a shot to make it to the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris this July. Mukayed and NCC head coach Joe Norton understand the significance of the opportunity.
That's the pinnacle of our sport. It's not the NFL or the NBA or whatever, right? And you could go to a D3 school and qualify for the Olympic trials, right? There's not a lot of dudes going D3 and going to the NFL.
But just a few years ago, when the program just began, there was no hardware Norton could point to during the recruiting process. No national titles, no Olympics, just a small Division III school in the Midwest with a good men's program and without any scholarships to offer.
We were just selling dreams back then.
Mukayed remembers that pitch very well.
It's like, you know what? I love wrestling. I want to start a women's program, and we kind of just had to have faith that he would follow through.
And to make recruiting more complicated, girls wrestling wasn't an official IHSA sport at the high school level in Illinois until just 3 years ago, so there weren't many local programs to pull from. Mukayed is from California, outside of Sacramento, and she didn't start wrestling until high school. Her school didn't have enough girls for their own team, so they'd practice with the boys' team and then compete against other girls in tournaments.
And I honestly liked it like that because, you know, the coaches treated us equally, the same as they treated the guys. And it was really challenging, but it made us really strong.
She says she wasn't that heavily recruited since she started so late. And she didn't really know about many programs with women's teams until she got the call from Coach Norton. And over the course of her college career, Mukayed has seen women's wrestling grow exponentially. There's more opportunity in high school. There are more and more colleges at every level with women's programs. It's also listed as an emerging sport by the NCAA, meaning it's on track for an official NCAA championship soon. The North Central program has took off too. That first year in 2019, they had 9 wrestlers. Now, 52 women from nearly 24 different states and 21 All-Americans on the roster. But with the women's wrestling scene becoming stronger and stronger, that comes with new challenges for a small school like North Central. Division III schools can't offer athletic scholarships. And Norton says they're competing against Division I and II programs who can offer full ride scholarships and high-end gear sponsorships. But Norton stresses the scholarship doesn't make you a better wrestler. It's the coaches and the training.
Well, coach, this school is free. I'm on a full ride. All right. Well, that doesn't put you in the Olympic trials. That doesn't put you on top of the podium at the NCAA championships.
And the competition is tougher. This year, the University of Iowa started a women's program. McGeehan says that's a huge deal. Iowa has one of the most successful Division I men's programs in the nation. Imani Jones, another All-American on the team, says competing against the likes of Iowa keeps them motivated. They still have something to chase, even when they're the defending national champions.
We just won the national tournament, and like I feel like we don't have the credit we deserve still, so everyone expects them to win, so I like it that we still are like the underdog going after them.
The Cardinals clinched their second consecutive regional title recently, and the North Central team looks to bring home back-to-back championships at the national tournament coming up March 8th and 9th. Just 5 years ago, Coach Norton was selling dreams to Mekhiyed and the other women joining the brand new program. Now, those Olympic dreams are reality, and the national championships are on the shelf, and the chance to compete at the highest level is right in front of them. All right, now it is time for my conversation with Rockford principal Daniela Boyer. We start off by talking about how she's enjoying her second year as an elementary school principal. Do you feel like you made a big jump in experience from year one to year two?
Yes. Personally, I feel stronger and self-confident of what I'm doing versus last year when you have a new situations that come up every day and you learn through those situations. So this year, those situations repeat, I know what actions I have to take, who to look for. Something excited about Lathrop for this year, we added 2 low autistic classrooms. Okay. So we have 2 classrooms with 20 students in total. It's a global programming and we're so excited and they're my joy. They're my joy.
That's new this year?
That's new this year. Yes, we have 2 classrooms. We call it global programming.
Okay.
But it's children with autism. Yes, and they're
great.
My joy. Yes, they're my joy. So I found another true north besides bilingual. My true north was always bilingual. And now I found another joy. It is special needs.
That's great. And I, with the bilingual too, I thought you mentioned too that this year you guys might be getting a new program for that too with the 50-50 dual. Do you guys have that at Lathrop this year?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
So we hope it will come soon, but not yet. So we still have the TBE, the transitional bilingual, one way. And then we also have our monolingual students. Yes.
And for people that don't know what the difference is and like what transitional bilingual education is, can you explain that for people that don't know?
So generally is when you talk about bilingual education, there are some ways you can go and you talk about. Our specific program is transitional bilingual education developmental. So that means the students get to keep their the first language, L1, in this case here, Lathrop is Spanish. We are a 90-10 model. So that means that 90% of their instruction in lower grade levels is in Spanish and 10% should be in English. And then it will evolve according to the grade levels till they hit like fourth grade, it will be 50-50. So 50% of the instruction time will be Spanish, 50% in English. So it depends on the needs and the goals, the vision, right, of the district, the vision of the school, the resources you have. Then you can choose the program that better fits where you're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you mentioned that you've got your new True North with the special education program. Is that something that you've really just discovered that is such a passion for you over the past couple of years then?
So I just discovered this year when the program came over, I learned that, let me say this way, I feel sometimes that I understand my children with autism because in some ways I connect when I try to speak English. I understand what everybody says, but sometimes the lack of a vocabulary or better saying things, we lack that verbalization, the output, right? Let me say it that way. And with the autism, many times, that's how they are. They're understanding everything you're saying, but they just cannot verbalize. So it brought a connection to me. And when they were bringing the program, they asked how I felt. I said, I completely understand who they are because that's how I feel sometimes. I'm understanding everything. And for lack of a better words, many times, it's hard to put out there what we want to say. So right. It's a connection, yes.
Yeah, it's like an expression thing where people just express differently, not necessarily, and you know, sometimes that gets characterized as if they don't understand when it's just their understanding in a different way.
Yes, and the most beautiful part is that many of the students that speak Spanish now have a principal that speaks Spanish. So they do speak Spanish with me. And then we made arrangements here at Lathrop for those students that need inclusion time to be in bilingual classrooms. So we gave them the opportunity because before they were going to monolingual classrooms with the ESL support, but now we have bilingual classrooms. So they can go and have their inclusion time in bilingual classrooms. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, and you are bilingual. You are trilingual, actually.
I'm trilingual. Yes, I'm trilingual. I love language. I love learning about people. And yes, that's who I am.
I wanted to ask you about that a little bit later, too. But I remember last time that we talked, you mentioned that you were also had been doing some experiments, that you had been learning some German, some French. How is that going? Have you been keeping that up or have you been moved on to different languages? Where are you at with that?
Yes. So I try to keep it up, especially with the German. And then I also will start Japanese this upcoming Wednesday.
Oh, what are you doing? How are you learning it?
So I'm going actually through Rock Valley. I was talking to one of my best friends. She's Peruvian. And I said, I need to look for another passion, another something. I just finished, you know, my master's. And I feel bored. I needed to go and get something, do something. She says, don't you want to learn another language?
How did you land on Japanese then?
So then I said, you know what? Let me see. I would like to be physically learning, right? Not just the online and program. I said, I wanted someone to teach me. So then I received it through mail, a flyer from Rock Valley. Yeah. And I was going through it and I saw Japanese, Spanish. I said, Spanish, I know. But now I can take Japanese, I guess. So that's where my route is going. So I'm taking Japanese starting next Wednesday. I'm excited.
That's going to be a new challenge, too, because that's different alphabet, too, right? We're like English, Spanish, Portuguese, pretty much, obviously, with like a few differences. Same letters, but now you're going in a completely new territory.
With the characters, right?
The characters,
and
yes.
And they have a different alphabet.
Yeah.
So they write it differently. So it will be interesting.
I really love languages, too. And it's just been like the last 2 years thing of studying Spanish and then Norwegian, too. And I found it really interesting. But those are both, like you said, like those are both the same alphabet, same, you know, characters, same letters. But I look at some and it really makes me want to try to take up a third one when I see people writing in like Arabic and I'm like, oh, that looks so beautiful. I want to learn that one.
Yes, that's how I feel. I hear them talking and I want to know what they're talking. I'm curious and it's just inviting. It invites you just to learn. And that's what I like about the United States is this diversity. And to see all of it.
And I heard someone talk about languages in the way that it's like it unlocks millions of people for you. And I think that some people don't think of it in that way. They think of it as just like not even like a chore, but just like a different subject instead of opening up countries and places and people to you where it's like, yeah, if you learn Spanish, that unlocks an extra 800 million people that you get to talk to, or, you know, it's so much.
Yes. Yes. And then once you get immersed into the culture, you learn all the jokes, then you incorporate all the jokes and many will look at you, especially monolingual will look at you and say, I don't understand what you're saying, but because you're bringing all the baggage with you and you start mixing them all up and then you get all this culture.
I heard an interview. Do you know Trevor Noah, the comedian? He yes. was the host of The Daily Show, and he's South African. And he speaks a bunch of different languages. And I know in Southern Africa, there's so many different languages to learn there. And he was saying that he feels like he has a different personality in each language he's speaking. Do you feel that way?
Yes, I do. Especially when I go back home to my home country, Brazil.
Brazil.
I don't know if we mentioned this in the interview. So my home country is Brazil. Every time I go to Brazil, before having my daughter, I didn't realize I changed personalities. But now that I have my daughter, she is my personality check. She will come to me and say, you change. You change. I am louder. I laugh louder. I will solve the problems in a different way because the culture requires you to solve in a different way. So there is no way you cannot change. You have
I
to
bet
solve
that was
them.
Really interesting to see your daughter's reaction to that.
Yes. She'll say, you're loud. Why you're loud? Why you're laughing loud? You're not like that when you were home.
But that makes so much sense, though, for like, especially for that being, you know, like your first language, like your mother tongue, right? Like when you're learning a new language, obviously you're not going to speak as confidently at first. Obviously you're not going to speak as loudly because you're, you know, in some ways kind of afraid of either making a mistake or trying to do pronunciation correctly. So like if you had a brand new language and then you were just really confident right away, that would be kind of incredible.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So like we said, you're in year two, and you previously were in this principal residency program that was a collaboration between Rockford Public Schools and Northern Illinois University and NIU. And you were in that program for a couple, like 2 years, right?
2 years. So the program is still happening. The district is still recruiting. It is 2 years in total. Yes, it's a master's degree in administration and education. Amazing. I have to say, amazing. Professors, amazing. The connection that I was able to build between the program and being here because I was a resident. So I was able to actually be hands-on while I was taking classes. I was well prepared, let's say that way, better than just taking the classes and then completing 80 hours during summer of internship and then starting a new job. Well, I had way over 80 hours in 2 years.
Yeah.
So it was great.
Yeah. So like for people that don't know too, like you were essentially like a principal in training. I don't know if you'd go as far as say that you were like an assistant principal at that time, or maybe that is how they say it, but you were a principal in training at the school you're at now for was it 2 years or was it 1 year? And then the second year when you were actually like transitioning to being a principal.
Actually, it was 2 years of dean/assistant principal. And then it happened that the principal at Lathrop retired. And then I applied for the position, went through the process like everybody else with the interview. And of course, I ended up getting the position. But it was 2 years within the program and also being here at the school where I'm at, residing. So I was learning while I was studying. And then I became a principal.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the bilingual part, and especially since Lathrop, I think, is like two-thirds bilingual,
right.
Two-thirds that was something that definitely drew you to Lathrop in the first place, though, right?
Exactly. So all it started with that, knowing that actually when I was teaching in middle school, one of the feeder schools was Lathrop. So I knew they had a great population. And that's why when I saw the assistant principal vacancy open, I applied for. I knew I was going to see my babies. Yes.
Well, and then literally speaking, also your daughter goes to Lathrop too. You are your daughter's principal, right?
Yes. I do believe that education should be the same across the board for everybody. Everybody deserves to have the same education. It doesn't matter which school you go to. And I requested through the school board to bring my daughter over to Lathrop. And it was accepted. She's excited. I am excited. But she's going to middle school next year. So as a joke around, I said to my colleagues here at Lathrop that I will be moving to middle school with her.
I was going to say, yeah, it's going to be exciting. And then in a couple of years, you get to be a high school principal too.
I will get to be in high school as well. Oh my goodness. I even told her future middle school principal, I said, just bear with me. Just bear with me. I don't know how to handle this situation very well.
How you guys have both enjoyed it? Has it been like, how often do you get to see her throughout the course of the day then?
So I try not to be a helicopter parent.
I try
to let it go. Also, I feel that the teachers, her teachers, would put lots of pressure knowing that she's my daughter. And I already had many conversations with all of them. I said, no, I'm not that type of a parent. Relax. You will be fine. You'll be fine. Relax. And yeah, so I do get to see her sometimes during recess or lunch. And then I think what helps me the most is that we come together and we leave together.
That is fun.
And I don't have to worry about who is going to watch Amira, who is not.
Right. Yeah. You know, I got just like the smallest version of that for a little bit because when my mom was a teacher, but when she was starting, she didn't start becoming a teacher until a little bit later, and she was like 40. And she started off as a substitute teacher before she wound up getting her degree and becoming a full-time teacher. And I remember a couple times, though, when I was in elementary school, I probably was in third grade. I think this is what happened. In third grade, I remember my mom was a substitute teacher in my school. And I don't think she ever got to sub directly in the class I was in. But I remember like walking to the bathroom and just like seeing my mom in the hallway and being like, what? Like, what is that? It was so like, it didn't even make sense to my brain that that was happening.
And when you are in fifth grade and you were transitioning to middle school, it becomes embarrassing too. So she sometimes will tell me, can you keep away from me a little bit?
See, but then next year when she has a problem and her mom isn't there, then she'll miss you, you know?
It will miss me. Yes. And actually she questioned me before. And if I do get in trouble, what are you going to do? I will follow the student code of conduct. It doesn't matter who you are. It just doesn't matter.
You know, I was interested in asking you, and I know that like a big thing that we talk about in this show with people that are administrators, and obviously pretty much everyone that becomes a principal or some type of administrator started off as a teacher, taught for a long time, and that transition can be very difficult when the thing that you fell in love with first about teaching is being in the classroom with kids every day. And now you move and, you know, you all of a sudden have a different relationship with students. And in order to maybe have an impact on more students, you don't get to be in that setting each and every day. Has your perspective changed over, you know, now that you have a little bit more experience of principle of knowing how to, you know, make that impact with students when maybe you're not their teacher that you're with every single day?
Yes, you have to build relationships with the adults. So just to share a little bit about my teachable moments and teaching, I started in Brazil. Actually, I was a teacher in Brazil, and my passion has always been language, right? And I always thought about teaching language to others. And that's how I ended up becoming a teacher, because I wanted to pass it on what I knew to others and that passion of go understand other people. We're global now, and go get yourself a job somewhere else and be that inspiration to others, right? So that's how I ended up becoming a teacher. And then actually when I came over to visit my host family, that I was an exchange student in 1998. I visited my host family and they said, Daniela, we do need bilingual teachers in the district, and you know Spanish and you know English, you should apply. So that's how everything started. And here in the United States, how I ended up being here, I applied with RPS 205, so some time ago, and they decided to sponsor. So they sponsored me while I was studying to become a bilingual teacher, ESL teacher. And that passion with the kids, I worked most of my years in middle school, and it was fun. It was fun. I left with them, and I was teaching English, Spanish, and chemistry, and physics, and math. But it was just the passion to be there and have fun with them. It was just enjoyable. So then when I came to the route of administration, for some reason, I did not have the idea that you would give yourself some distance from the kids, because now you have to take care of something else, right? So it was first a shock. And I thought I was going to have more contact with the students. I didn't. I was addressing mostly the behaviors. So at some point, I questioned myself, is this what I really want to do? Because before, it was manageable and I was having fun. And now I'm working with some difficult situations that they're not fun. So then I went through and I said, let's see how it will go. Let's see how it will go. So when I became a principal, I think in my first year was mostly to implement my vision, where I wanted to go, and then build the relationships with the adults, because that's how you impact the kids, is building the relationship with the adults and giving them the support that they need. If it is a listening, if it is a supply, if it is just an extra person to be there for them, then I understood that. Do I have time with the students? I confess to you all that I do go to recess many times.
Good.
I do have meetings many times during recesses, but when I can, when I'm available, I need to connect to my students. I do. I still miss.
Well, it's interesting. I think, Daniela, I think that a lot of people, like, that aren't teachers, that just went through school themselves as students, I think it's harder for them to really, like, measure how important a principal is to everything that happens in the school, because they, you know, like students often don't interact with the principal unless something has gone wrong or unless something has gone really well, you know, maybe they're getting right. celebrated for something too. But it's like, we have a difficult time quantifying the impact that a principal makes if you are not, you know, a teacher or a principal, because it's just not someone that we see every day. And until something goes very wrong, and then people realize that, you know, the principal is important. But I do think it is really interesting, because it's something that's is hard to measure, since you're not with students every day, and the work that you do is so often with the adults in the classroom. But obviously everything trickles down, right?
Right. Yes, it does. And actually, even if students many times will ask me, you don't come see us more often like you used to. And then I had to sit down and explain to them the why. So actually, I explained and I showed even data to them. And I said, this is kind of why. Now, do you see where we are at, you know, with our test scores? And we needed to move to green. And that's my job now. I needed to make sure you guys are getting the right instruction so you guys can all move to green. So
that you really sat them down with the numbers, yes, and were like, we yes. were here and we needed to get
callers.
To here?
Yes, I do callers with them. I do callers. Yes, I do. And then they will sit down and they will, you know, they accept it. They accept it. They get engaged, they involved, and they know, oh, we are here. So now we needed to make our way to this green collar. Okay. So I say, you know, that's why many times you don't see me and many times I'm in meetings, just to make sure you get what you need.
Yeah. Yes. I think this is something that we've talked about too, that, you know, there is not a lot of like bilingual representation in administration. And it's something that there's so much research about having, you know, more diverse administrators and principals, and how that benefits not just the, you know, Hispanic students or the Black students in the schools, but it benefits everyone when we're talking about test scores and everything like that.
Yes, exactly. And I do feel that I represent more than bilingual Hispanic.
Yeah.
To the fact that I have a child who is half African American. My first language is Portuguese. So I had to learn other two languages and other two cultures too. And I do see that way, that we do need more diversity. The students look up to us. They do look up to us and they model what we are. They do.
I thought it was so fascinating when I got to go to Lathrop. You had that poster on the wall that it has the iceberg of culture, where there's like the obvious things like food and language and dance. And then there's the unspoken things that is like even how you, things that you wouldn't consider that are as different as like how people express physical pain. And I thought that list was so interesting.
Yes, how they view animals, right? We're so easy to be judgmental of others, like concept of a beauty. How do you see beauty in certain countries? They're not certainly like ours. How you see beauty, pain, I mean, how you solve problems with your emotions. It is deeper than that. Yes. It is deeper than language and food only.
And you talked a little bit about how you got started in teaching, but I wanted to go in a little more detail about your kind of teacher origin story. Yes. You mentioned that you were a teacher in Brazil beforehand, and that was kind of inspired by your love of language. How was it something that when you were a kid you realized that you wanted it, or was it were you a little bit older when you realized you wanted to go into education?
Yeah, so I was 8 when I started playing with a chalkboard and my dogs. So my dogs are my students.
That's a new one, actually. We get a lot of forcing like younger siblings to be your students, stuffed animals, but I don't know if we've had like real animals as students. That's fun. That's creative.
Oh, I did. I did have 2 pets and they were my students.
Were they good students?
They were good students. Oh, one good. Liked me very much, but not the other. It's okay.
We always so that's have teaching, though, right?
That's teaching. So when I started when I was 8, then when I came to the United States, I had a teacher that inspired me. Her name was, I remember her last name, I'm sorry, is Miss Belmontes. She was my Spanish teacher at Harlem High. She was such a great teacher, and the way she taught made everybody actually speak Spanish. And that's how I learned Spanish. So Spanish was not my first language, and that's how I ended up learning Spanish, was with Miss Belmontes.
Right. I remember hearing that you like came in and they thought in the program that you did speak Spanish.
Correct.
And just like placed you in a Spanish class when you did not speak that.
Right. Exactly. And she had a role plays. So she had all these role plays that we had to do. And it was so engaging. And that's how I started learning Spanish. So then I went back to Brazil and I kept going with my education. And in my last year of high school, I remember so well, one of my literature teachers saying, what do you guys want to be when you grow up? So, you know, we were all sharing. And when we got to my turn, I said, I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to go to the university here. It was close to, you know, the school. And I'm going to become a teacher. A language teacher. And he looked at me and said, no, you're not. You do not have the background. You don't have enough background to become a teacher. So that actually inspired me more.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when people challenge you, I think, inside of me, it's like, no, I'm going to do it. And I will prove to you that that's what I want. So I ended up going to college in Brazil. My bachelor's from there, and I completed the course. They have specific teaching courses there, and that's how I ended up becoming a teacher. And at the same time, because I had lived in the United States, they needed an ESL teacher at a private school, a small private school. So I ended up there to teach English, ESL, English as a second language, to Portuguese speakers. And that's how it started. Then I ended up coming here to the United States to visit. And that's when I applied for RPS 205 and all my paperwork with immigration and all the sponsorship happened. But that's kind of my path to teaching.
When you were in high school and mm-hmm. you came to the U.S. to study, I want to highlight that again for people. You did not speak Spanish. Did you speak English at that point either?
No.
And so you kind of had to try to learn both at the same
time.
Did that feel overwhelming at the time? Or were you just was it a challenge that you were excited?
Yeah. I was excited. My classmates in my Spanish class made it easy for me. I think they engaged me and they wanted to know more about me because then my teacher at that time, she made it such a big deal. Now we have someone from Brazil and it kind of, it's a Latina and the culture. So it made it so exciting. And then I learned both at the same time.
That's so interesting. And then you also did some immersion living and learning Spanish in Mexico too, right?
In Mexico as well. Yeah. So when I finished college, instead of having a big party, it's very common in Brazil to have a big party when you graduate. Well, I decided that money I wanted to invest living in Mexico. So then I lived abroad one more time.
In Mexico did you live?
So I lived in Tepic, Nayarit. Yes. Wow. Tepic, Nayarit. Wonderful host family. Also through the Rotary Club. So both exchange programs I completed through the Rotary Club. And I said, if you allow me, I will go even more somewhere else. But then I ended up here. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. And the first time that you came in high school, was the reason that you came was also because of your interest in love of language already at that time you were interested in studying? Or
well, that's an interesting story. I love the United States so much since I was 5 years old. I was watching TV with my dad, and I remember so well until today. I was watching the TV with my dad, and I remember some images of war and things in the news. We were watching the news. And I looked and there was an American flag on the news. And I looked and I said, what is U.S.? Because it was the abbreviation in Portuguese at that time. I said, well, what is the U.S.? And my dad was like, oh, it's a country and they speak English. And I don't know why I had this connection since I was five. And then when I was in fourth grade, we had ESL in public schools. So language in Brazil is very common. So I want to share that with you all, that in Brazil is very common for any school to offer another language. It's common.
So yeah, I think that I don't think that it was offered until I was in high school.
Wow.
And even then it was like, do you want to take Spanish or do you want to take art was the big thing. It was like, you can do art or foreign language. And so many people were like, oh, I'll just do art. And I did Spanish in high school, but I don't think, at least it wasn't on my radar that it was offered until beforehand, which I think is probably changed now. I think in the most places in the U.S., hopefully they probably offer that a little bit earlier.
More, right. Yes, In middle school they do now.
Yeah.
So then I had this passion. I could not explain about the United States. I even bought myself a flag. And when I was in fourth grade, my teacher said, actually had a parent conference with my mom and said, your daughter does very well in English. Why don't you pay a private school, an English private school for her to go? So then, we started that passion. And a funny story is we have city parades. And one of the schools that I went to loved to carry around the world flags. Well, I made my parents wake up at 5 a.m., be at the school sick so I could carry the American flag.
Wow.
So all that's my pictures in parades, I will be carrying the American flag.
You gotta, if there's that picture still around, you should hang that in your office.
I should. So, yeah. My first experience in the United States was when I was 16. So there was no reason why. I had no contact with any Americans. There was no fast food around, nothing, nothing. So anyway, that was my passion. And then when I turned 15, even in Brazil, we have a big 15th birthday party. We do not call quinceañera, but we do have the 15th birthday party. And I told my dad, I don't want the party. I wanted to be an exchange student, but in the USA.
Wow.
And he said,
you had vision from back then too.
I know. And it was only the USA. So I completed the paperwork. And I remember the Rotary, what do they call chairman? I think that's what they call the chairman said, well, Daniela, we have Iceland. Would you like to go to Iceland? It's open. There is, you know, a place where we can send you to Iceland. I said, nope, I will wait. I want the United States.
Wow, what a different path that could have been.
I know. Then I was going to be in Iceland, maybe. I don't think so. But I ended up here in Love Spark.
Wow.
In Love Spark. Yes, I insisted. It took 1 year. I waited. I said, I'm patient. And then when I came, I fell in love with the culture. I fell in love with the people. I felt in love with, even though we do have our society's issues, but I fell in love with the way people solved things emotionally. So I just decided to come back. And fantastic. I'm here. I haven't been here now since 2007.
That's exciting. Do you get to go back to Brazil in the summers very often? Or because I know that's an issue too, because you got, you know, pretty much most of your family that is in Brazil still, right?
Yeah. So most of my family is still in Brazil. I just have one sister and she lives in Wisconsin, north of Wisconsin. But the rest live in Brazil. And also I want to pass my culture to my daughter, even though she resists. But I want her to grasp and develop the love for my culture as well. We do tend to go once a year.
Yeah.
I chose to go during their winter. So their winter is when it's summer for us, because where I'm from during winter is 99 degrees. So during summer, it's complicated. But then this year, I went, and now during the holidays, Christmas and New Year's, I decided to go when it's summer down there. And it was every day, 116, 120, 116. The water was around 75, 80 degrees. And we were talking about faucet water. I was like, I don't know if I come back during summer.
Yeah, sheesh.
It was interesting. So we enjoy going back and forth. It's expensive and it's a long trip, because until I get to my town, my hometown, it takes about 24 to 30 hours.
Wow. Like a full day to get there.
Yes.
Well, and now it's, you know, your daughter is going to be in middle school. So she's now like old enough to really grasp a lot of the cultural things. And it's interesting how that'll evolve as she gets older, her connection to all of that.
Yes, and she starts seeing already, and she questions why here we see more garbage in the streets? Mm. Why do we have dog streets? And then you start comparing things. I say there is no right or wrong. There is corruption. And then we start talking about, but she does see now the differences. Yes.
Yeah.
But she does resist speaking Portuguese. She does.
You mentioned that's something that happens sometimes especially with younger students, that they often resist speaking in another language.
Another language, yes. That's why I am patient. Let's say that way. I'm patient with everyone that is learning another language. Sometimes that's something they want to do, and sometimes that's something that they don't want to do, right? And I'm patient. If you want to do, it's your path, and if you don't want, it's okay.
Yeah. I only have a couple more questions for you.
Yes.
And we have one of them that's kind of education related, one of them that's more language related. I'm curious, again, you have a passion for learning languages. I've become much more excited about it. Do you have any advice for people that are thinking about picking up and trying to learn a new language for the first time?
Yes, do not give up. It doesn't matter your age. Especially when I talk to elderlies or even my own parents, I will give the experience of my own parents and they will say, I'm too old to learn this. No, you're not. Actually, it does help your brain. So my advice to you, go for it. Go for it. And don't give up. It does take time. Speaking is harder than understanding. People will say, I understand what I read. I took Spanish and I understand what I read. Yes, understand, listening. It's those are easy. But the problem will be when you have to speak. And you know what? It's okay. See, I have an accent. I have an accent. You will be fine. I have an accent in Spanish too. Even though people that don't understand Spanish, they don't realize, but I do have an accent in Spanish as well. So don't be scared to put the language out there.
Yeah. And it is hard.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And then you can communicate, even if it is just one word. You just say word that you know. And the other person will connect to you right away. I had a parent that speaks Swahili. And she came and she met with me and everything. So then by the end of the conversation, I said, no. I want to say thank you in Swahili. And I said, how do you say it? And she could not understand me. So I took a translator out and I'm looking. And then I learned asante. And I was like, I looked at her and I said, asante. And you know what? It connected right there. You connect to someone right there.
It's right there. I love that.
Yes.
That'll be your next language after Japanese and Swahili, right?
Asante.
Asante. And then what's something about being a principal that you wish more people knew about?
Something about being principal, the more people knew about, I will say that we do develop thick skins, but because we just hear problems all day long, right? And we're humans too, so we're not perfect. That's something I wish everybody knew is that I'm not perfect and I do make mistakes, but I'm here. I'm ready to listen. And we do develop thick skin in a sense of, many of the problems at this time, they become common because they repeat. So what is new to someone, for me, it's not, because they are repetitive. So I wish more people knew that it doesn't mean I don't care. It means that I have gone through the situation. It will be okay. It will be okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, so that Danielle, is my attitude. Thank you so much for taking so the time out of your Friday afternoon. Gracias. Tusen takk, they would say in Norwegian. Oh, thank you very much.
And I will say obrigada. Obrigada in Portuguese.
All right, Danielle. It was great to see you. I'm glad that we got to connect on this.
The same. Thank you. Thanks so much.
That was Lathrop Elementary School Principal Daniela Boyer. Thank you again so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. As always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on this show. It's how we get all of our guests. Please do consider sending them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. Wherever you're hearing the podcast, subscribe, leave us a rating, or share it. If you like what we do, it really is the best way to get even more perspectives on the show. You can subscribe to the Teacher's Lounge newsletter to keep up to date with everything going on with the show. You can find a link to do that on this episode's webpage over at WNIJ.org. A big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ups for the music you hear each and every episode of this show. A big thank you to Spencer Tritt for making our Teacher's Lounge logo. And I have been your host, Peter Medlin, and we'll be back with even more Teacher's Lounge very soon. See ya.